launch a Facebook page with tons of weight loss content to understand what people actually want and need. And after maybe 100,000 of articles posted in the Facebook group, we gathered enough data to have a clear picture of our core audience and what the most sought after topics are.
Mm-hmm.
After we had enough followers, we published Better Me Weight Loss app, a solution to the most urgent problem
the
audience was trying to solve in this Facebook group.
Mm-hmm.
The success exceeded our expectation. For 10 days, we get mostly about 100,000 installs for 10
wow.
days. We received a lot of feedback and kept improving our testing, our solution on our audience, making it exactly the way people wanted to see it.
Hello and welcome to How Things Grow. How Things Grow is a podcast about growth and the people who drive it. Join me, your host Shamant Rao, as I speak with some of the smartest people in tech and go behind the scenes of growth trajectories of companies and technologies that power our world today. We dive into the stories of many of these growth leaders and their companies. We talk about origins, early victories, strokes of luck, troughs of failure, and much more, and deconstruct many of the things they do to drive dramatic growth for their companies and technologies. How Things Grow is presented by me, Shamant Rao, CEO of the mobile user acquisition firm Rocketship HQ. I'm supported today by Catherine Fung, our audio producer.
My guest today is Victoria Reper. Victoria is the founder and CEO of BetterMe, a fitness app based out of Ukraine. I'm very excited to have Victoria because she has such an incredibly unconventional background and story that I find very, very inspiring. In this interview, we talk about Victoria's early upbringing in a tiny village in the east of Ukraine. We talk about how she basically educated herself early on, about how she moved to Kyiv, about how she transitioned from working on transportation logistics to working on technology. We go into her work on viral content and how that led her to build a company with global ambitions from Kyiv. We also explore her personal life and systems, which I find incredibly inspiring and intimidating, for how she makes time and space for contemplation, and how she also finds this introspection so essential to her work. What's also incredible is that she's just 26, and she brings to her life and work an intentionality that I find incredibly rare.
I'm very excited to welcome Victoria Reper to How Things Grow. Victoria, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Victoria, you were raised in a tiny village on the east of Ukraine. You have said, I made my way through education and a lot of reading. Tell me about where you grew up and your first exposure to reading. What was it like?
Okay. I'm from a small village of just 500 people near Donetsk. My school was so tiny, and I only had 12 classmates, and each lesson was barely 20 minutes long. Throughout my early years, I excelled at formal education, but I knew that to excel at life, I had to learn many more things outside of the classroom on my own. So I reading every book I could get hands-on, from business titles to classical such as Dostoevsky's and Tolstoy. And from my upbringing, I learned not to wait for a guru that will teach me, because in my childhood, there were no good teachers.
So when you moved to Kyiv, was there a culture shock? Because from a 500-person town to you're in a bigger city, that's 3 million people. What were some of the challenges you faced when you moved from small village school to the city?
After moving from a tiny village to a big city, I surprisingly didn't feel a cultural shock.
Yeah.
What I felt was relief.
Yeah.
Big relief. I felt like I finally found my environment. Big mm-hmm. city, busy, smart people, resources to grow, goal mm-hmm. to achieve. I adapted pretty fast, and being busy at the university and surrounded by cool people really mm-hmm. helped me in it. Kyiv School of Economics, founded by George Soros, has mm-hmm. a really transparent admission system, and I was surrounded by people with the same values who wanted to grow and unleash their potential. So I didn't matter where I came from because we were on the same wavelength.
So even though the external trappings of the new culture seemed new to you, sounds like you were just excited by the new opportunities that you encountered in the city. And you graduated. Your first job was as a finance manager for transportation and warehouse. And what was the path from working on transportation and warehousing to working in tech?
In university, I took every single opportunity and participated in every competition that came my way. Thanks to that, I got my first job in Procter & Gamble, hired me to the logistics department right after my graduation. Working for one of the world's largest corporations in FMCG sector gave me a glimpse of what it means to really think big and mm-hmm. always strive for more. My manager was so demanding. He was fit throughout the company. He was also obsessed with setting up and fine-tuning all the processes within his reach, teaching me that organizational efficiency is the akin to a well-trained body of human being. Mm-hmm. And within a year, I learned from every professional I met and acquired so much knowledge that my hockey stick growth started to plateau. It was time for change for me. And I applied and go into IT accelerator school. And one of the largest digital publishing company in Ukraine called Kinesis. Now it's the biggest product IT company in Ukraine. And I came there with no background in tech, literally dived into an absolutely unfamiliar industry. Mm-hmm. I was fascinated how rapidly it grew and how many opportunities it opened. There, I threw myself into the startup world and get plenty of opportunities to pitch in business ideas and eventually join one of the excited startups within the company. So I decided to make an unusual switch from FMCG to tech. It might seem too risky, but I believe that to grow fast career-wise, you have to work in the industry that also growing fast. I'm happy with my choice. I changed my life completely, and I quit persuading people that such a dramatic career switch is not scary, as every successful business everywhere is built on two key elements, revenue and cost.
Yeah.
You focus on maximizing revenue and minimizing cost. A lack of experience couldn't be compensated with ambitious productivity and, most important, with desire to learn, grow, and develop.
I certainly see that you really, really were thinking about moving to an industry and space that was growing faster than FMCG. But I'm curious how you prepared for that shift, right? Because if you're working for a tech incubator that works on viral content, you have to learn a lot of things that you never studied in economic school, that you never were working on when you're working on transportation and warehousing. So how did you prepare and how did you learn for a job that required you to produce viral content?
The key lessons that I learned in startup world that you can't prepare to mm-hmm. anything. You just test and learn. Mm-hmm. And the first, you test, learn, and measure.
Yeah. And you were working on viral content at this time. Can you elaborate and tell us more about what that means and what your day-to-day looked like when you were making this viral content?
My first position when I joined the Genesis was an analyst in the media department.
Mm-hmm.
I analyzed tons of snippets, images, and headlines mm-hmm. from pop media to find patterns that make content viral and create guidelines for our editorial team. Later, this group helped me when I was launching BetterMe, the ability to analyze pattern and create the most demanded product is one of the key factors of our success.
Yeah. At the time, you said you were analyzing a lot of viral content. What do you mean by viral content? When you say headlines and snippets, were these articles? What were the articles about? Can you tell us more about what specifically these were about?
It was articles. In any topics from news to health, all about content in any topics that allow us to grow.
So this content about various topics, health and fitness and finance, where was it getting published?
It was getting published on Facebook.
And how did the company make money?
On advertisement, because people just read our articles mm-hmm. and see the advertisement.
And the advertisements were on your website?
Yes, but because we are working with Facebook, it's a system of audience network. So we make money with Facebook.
Got it. So Facebook would show ads on your website through the audience network. That's how you would monetize this content.
Mm-hmm.
And you were, as an analyst, figuring out what was going viral. How do you magnify that? And while you were working on this content, what surprised you about some of the content that was going viral? Because you were seeing a lot of headlines, a lot of snippets. Were there things that surprised you at this time when you were looking at a lot of this data?
I learned that in social media, we only have between 1 and 3 seconds to catch users' attention as they scroll through the news feed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So we need to pack this message, but at the same time, make it as simple as possible for the customer's brain to absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I was surprised how analytical and technical content creation might be.
Mm-hmm.
People might think it's all about creativity. You can literally craft a real video or post. Yes, it requires a lot of analysis and data, but it's possible through observing users' behavior and tastes. If you want the content to become viral, create what people want, not what you want, what people find amusing, interesting, useful, not you personally, not your boss or colleague. It maximizes their chances to hit their audience's core interest.
Can you think of an example where you looked at the data or your team looked at the data and you were like, this is the kind of content we should make, and it actually went viral? Is there an example that comes to mind?
It may be. We know that trend now in health and fitness is keto diet, but mm-hmm. no one knows that the really key trends and key demands is vegetarian keto diet.
Oh.
The really lack of some recipes, meals, and etc. But it's really huge demand that everyone need really clear guide for vegan and vegetarian keto diet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, great, we can provide more, and no other players see this niche.
Right. So how did the analysis inform the idea that the vegan keto diet is something you should be writing about? What was the analysis? What did that look like?
We just post on our social media, maybe.
Okay.
Previously, we can post 2 times a day about 50 articles.
You post 50 articles?
Yes, okay. On every topic in health and fitness, not just test and show.
Right.
Not select what you want, but just everything.
Okay.
And absorb the key topics, the key things that have the highest engagement.
What metrics do you look at when you say engagement?
Of course, if we talk about articles, it's mm-hmm. the number of clicks. If we talk about just video or images,
yeah.
it's more shares.
Right. Right. So you're like, okay, we want to understand what's working in health and fitness. So you think of 50 topics, you post everything, and then you see what comes up as a winner.
Yes.
That sounds like a lot of work.
This work really need.
Yeah.
If you want to succeed in this overheated niche.
Certainly. And let's say you're posting 50 articles on Facebook, and you and your team were based in the Ukraine at the time, but all of these 50 articles are going up for a global audience. Was it easy to be based in Ukraine and understanding what global audiences want, maybe what some housewife in Miami wants? So you're writing for that. Was it a challenge to think about people that are very different from you guys?
The challenge is mostly in people's minds. The key is to make the first step, and then after 99 fails, team make the 100th step. Graphical difference is not such a huge challenge. Analyzing our audience and its interest. You create content for people. Yes, there are Americans, Ukrainians, Brazilians, Indians, but first of all, they are people.
Yeah.
We all have similar needs and interests.
Certainly, we all have fairly fundamental needs, right? And if you're posting on Facebook what resonates with one culture, much of it, not all of it, much of it can resonate with other cultures. You've spoken about how you guys are posting viral content. Over the years, at least from my understanding, Facebook promotes viral content less and less. Facebook's basically saying, we're going to promote paid content. If you need to go viral, we're not going to promote organic content. So was that ever a challenge for you guys as you were like posting on your Facebook pages over the years?
Yes, of course. So we need to find new niche in our businesses. And one of them was we started business of application.
So you guys were looking for new ways to grow, it sounds like. And therefore, apps are a good way for us to grow. So how did you guys come upon that idea that apps are the right way to go, rather than build viral content for maybe Snapchat or Instagram or a lot of other opportunities to continue to build viral content?
We just know that business of application will grow. We understood from our side, we have a lot of experience in contents.
Yeah.
We just try to pack this content in our application. The first of our application was Boardman, Beauty Hub, Video Kit. All three apps failed.
You said Boardman, that's B-O-R-E-D, Boardman.
Yes.
All right. I want to know what is Boardman.
It's just fun memes for men.
Oh, fun memes for bored men, presumably. And so it's basically a content app, right? You're producing content that contains memes for men. Is that it? Okay, cool. And you said it did not work out well?
Because as we understood then,
yeah.
Because they didn't address immediate and important enough problems. It was a pleasant but important experience that helped us realize if you want to succeed in the long term, you have to create an app that solves problems, not mm-hmm. kills time or earns money.
Interesting. And did you guys have this insight when you were producing content, viral content for Facebook? Did you guys have that insight at all?
No, we don't have. We not understood how people eat content on Facebook, and if you just launch your new app, it's a different.
You said when you were building the app, you learned that the app's success depended on its ability to solve a problem.
Yes.
And it sounds like with the viral content, it was not necessarily geared at solving any specific problem. So
yes.
Why was that different? Why is an app geared towards solving a problem versus viral content, which is presumably entertaining, but not really solving a problem?
Because for viral content, you shouldn't pay. And mm-hmm. in application, you should pay because mm-hmm. you provide something unique.
Yeah. So with viral content, you're not wanting them to pay. So you just want them to be entertained. And you're monetizing them via ads, but they're not paying money. Whereas with an app, your expectation is that they will pay. Did you not think about, look, we could maybe make it entertaining content that does not solve a problem, but monetize them via ads on the app? Did you guys think about that?
We know, but if we monetize only with ad monetization, it's yeah. really not a good point today. It's not promote with iOS
mm-hmm.
it's subscription. Everything Google and Apple now interesting in subscription.
Yeah, certainly. And I think with the subscription model, the economics becomes so much stronger. Are you aware of any health and fitness apps that monetize via ad monetization at all?
Yeah, there are many examples, but they are not in top applications. For example, Android app, big health and fitness publishers, it's about maybe 20 applications. Leap Fitness Group, they used only ad monetization
okay.
for users. It's really interesting since in terms of ad monetization for Android.
Okay.
And for developing countries, but it's not our focus.
Right. It sounds like you guys were very clear that you would not monetize via ads, you would monetize via subscriptions. What inspired that direction for you guys?
We was focusing mostly on speed, and we have prioritized speed over efficiency in some
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And in order to achieve big results,
yeah.
because we are, of course, focusing on subscription. In
right.
the long run, we also consider the possibility to go not only developed markets, but also Latin America and Asia market. And for this market, it's also interesting model. But primarily for developed countries, it's a subscription.
Interesting. And is that because these developed countries have higher income, people are more prosperous? Is that why subscription is a better model?
Maybe. We don't know what we don't know.
That can be a hypothesis. Just to rewind the clock a bit, you said you launched your first couple of apps and those didn't work well because they were not solving problems. They were just content. They were cool content, but they were not solving problems. And your first app that was actually solving a problem was BetterMe, which is what you're still running. When you decided to launch BetterMe, what were the first steps that you took?
It was a joint decision with BetterMe's co-founder and my business partner, Vital Laptionak.
Mm-hmm.
After a couple of failed products, we decided to focus on modern-day human problems.
Mm-hmm.
While working on Edgenesis, my co-founder Vitaly and I noticed the rapidly growing demand for high-quality health and fitness content.
Mm-hmm.
We researched the industry deeper and found out that 7 out of 10 people in the United States are overweight now.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 out of 10 will be by 20-30 years.
Mm-hmm.
In the future, this will constitute a major problem for most families in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We also found that the fitness app market has skyrocketed from virtually nothing to 500 million in just a few years. A significant part of the larger fitness industry will migrate online, including mm-hmm. mobile apps.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided to take advantage of this opportunity and yeah. try ourselves and created something really valuable. Sometimes that will affect people in a good way,
yeah.
will help them to become healthier.
Yeah.
And going to the question, how we launch it, having a lot of experience in content marketing, we started an intense campaign aimed at gathering the audience interested in health and weight loss issues on the social media. First, we launched a Facebook page with tons of weight loss content to understand what people actually want and need. And after maybe 100,000 of articles posted in the Facebook group, we gathered enough data to have a clear picture of our core audience and what the most sought after topics are. After we had enough followers, we published Better Me Weight Loss App, a solution to the most urgent problem the audience was trying to solve in this Facebook group. This has exceeded our expectation. For 10 days, we get mostly about 100,000 installs for 10 days. We received a lot of feedback and kept improving our testing, our solution on our audience, making it exactly the way people wanted to see it.
That's so interesting, and there's so many aspects of your answer that I want to dive into. So first of all, it sounds like you guys built a Facebook page, made viral content for the page, built up the audience on the Facebook page because that's what you were familiar with, because that's what you had done over the last couple of years in building Facebook content, viral content for Facebook in the past. So you knew that that's a path that you were very, very familiar with. And you knew how to get people engaged. You knew how to build up an audience out there. What isn't very common, though, is being able to transfer that audience from a Facebook page to an app. I don't know anybody else who's done that, and certainly not done that at a scale where you are able to drive like 100,000 users per day, which I think is a humongous volume of users. So did you guys have a quantitative model of some sort that said, look, we need to get to X number of users liking Facebook posts, and then if we do that, we know the app's going to be successful. That's when we can send X number of users to the app. So what was the math like that you guys were doing that said, look, here's the kind of audience we need on the Facebook page to have a successful app?
It really was, as I said, it's not that we planned, and maybe now I'm really not recommended to do this. But as we grow from media business, it's a well for us. And yes, today we are only one health and fitness applications and family of health and fitness applications that have the biggest social media community. Because now we have about 10 million. We have 5 million in Facebook, about 1 million in Instagram subscription. We also develop Snapchat, Twitter, Pinterest, everywhere. We cover and promote our brand.
And are these primarily to engage your existing users, or do these drive a significant quantity of new users? How do you describe your goals for your social pages right now, a couple of years after the app has launched?
Now we have about 20-30% of our community drive organically.
Wow.
We understood that when we promote our application, it just grow organically, maybe further and further. We not follow now any special purpose in our social media. We know that also our social media grow organically, and we just post any recommendation free for our users. Someone that are interesting and want to go deeper, they install our application.
So in some ways it's freemium because you're giving free content, free information. And if they want more, they want more in-depth information, they come into the app and they actually pay for it.
Absolutely right.
So in many ways, you guys have much more in common with a media company than tech companies. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. But primarily, we use only analytics and our business media and application. It's data-driven and technology-driven.
Certainly. And what I will also underscore is you built the business model based on your own strengths, because you had seen exactly how powerful viral content could be. And you built the entirety of your business on that strength. Your app launched in 2017, is that right?
Yes.
So the app launched in 2017, and this was a point of time when many could argue that the app ecosystem had reached considerable maturity, but you were able to break into a relatively mature market on the back of your own strengths. And that's something that I find very, very impressive about what you've done. According to my research, you basically tested the early version of your app on your own team. Can you speak to how you guys tested the app on your own team? What did that process look like?
Firstly, we understood that weight loss is a universal concern and universal women pain around the world. Mm-hmm. We know the key direction and users that we first need 5 million users on our Facebook community with members from India to Alaska and everywhere in between. As I have mentioned earlier, we used firstly test and learn approach. We try before release of our weight loss app and when we developed it, we try all diets on our team. Mm-hmm. And, also meditation app. We meditate 60 days every day. Mm-hmm. Just invite guru that provide our meditation app. It's great because 80% of our team never ever meditate. Great because we provide meditation for beginners. So from iOS developers to happiness managers understood what is the pain of our new product and our release.
So you guys tested the early version of the app on your own team, and did you get learnings that you could not have gotten just by looking at public literature or looking at your user base? What are the key learnings that you got just by looking at your own team?
Yes, because it's really rare today when we have 5 million application on iOS that every user will provide you feedback. And we understood that our vegetarian diet that one of the best health and fitness teacher in United States wrote is really hard to follow because I don't know, there are problem with too many carbs. And you just try on yourself, understood that it's impossible to follow it, and of course provide feedback and change it.
So there are some posts that really resonate, that really take off on Facebook and Instagram and all these platforms. And there's some posts that don't really take off. And there are some posts that drive a lot of installs and subscriptions. There's some that don't. So what are the characteristics of posts that really take off?
A post that will not only get the likes, but will also drive people to the funnel has to hit their audience interest on every level, on every step of customer journey. A successful post doesn't have to be pretty, but it can be that's what attracts attention and motivates your audience to learn more. What the post has to do is to call for reaction, emotion, hit the pains and concerns of the audience. For example, sometimes to sell a weight loss app, you don't have to put a beautiful woman on that. You have to put your customers that is dreaming to become better. You have to put an image of a real woman with real measurements that might not be perfect, but that will call for reaction. That's me.
Right, right? So you're seeking to provoke a reaction, and certainly having realistic looking people in the post is certainly one way to do that. Are there other examples that come to mind?
But it's mostly in our audience, for example, we try everything, and okay. every day we have really new insights. For example, now we have promo post that is the best. It's just guidance of challenges. Mm-hmm. Just table, no people, only table about some challenges routine, 21 days of self-care challenge or etc.
Cool. Interesting. To switch gears a bit, as of last week, you guys had multiple apps, 6 apps in the App Store, and 4 of your apps were ranked number 2, number 4, 15, and 26 in the health and fitness space. So why have 6 different apps rather than have 6 sections within one single app?
We developed our ideas for 2 years, and today we understood that our goal is to create a health and fitness ecosystem that brings harmony to the body and soul. Mm-hmm. As Yuval Harari wrote in his book, Homo Deus, mm-hmm. first time ever, more people die from eating too much than from eating too little. Mm-hmm. And more people commit suicide than are killed by soldiers, terrorists, and criminals put together. Mm-hmm. The modern 21st century problem in developed countries are obesity and depression, and mm-hmm. we want to help people tackle them and live healthier and happier lives. When we started BetterMe, our goal wasn't just release one app. Our goal was to build a platform that provides people with tools for self-care and personal health management. There are so many aspects of health, mental health, weight loss, health tracking, cardio performance, and etc. We want to create an environment that allows people to take care of everything within one system. But asking to the next year question, why 6 different apps? At first, for us, in terms of development, it was easy to test MVPs separately mm-hmm. to understand what is the good demand topics and the most hottest and etc. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, we are looking to unite all of our application into one single application that will become maybe the Uber of health and fitness.
Mm-hmm. Got it. So you guys were testing different topics and themes, and you wanted distinct applications to direct people to.
Yes.
And obviously you've seen not only how people interact with the content, but you've also seen people use the app and get results using the app. And what are the kinds of people who succeed in losing weight and hitting their fitness goals as compared to those that fail? Are there specific characteristics that you see that distinguishes these two groups?
One thing maybe that I have noticed through is that people with a strong internal motivation tend to perform better. Mm-hmm. You can't make someone to lose weight. If yeah. people are happy with their weight and they feel well, it's fine. There is no need to force them to change. But yeah. some of those people are falling under the pressure of social judgment and try to lose weight to look better in someone's eyes. It's hard to lose weight for someone. You have to do it for yourself.
Yeah.
People who do it because they love themselves are more motivated, disciplined, and persistent than people who try to fit in someone's beauty standards. And the discipline is crucial in the weight loss process. Mm-hmm. The discipline is core. Everyone that follow our program will get results. I think before losing weight, you should ask yourself, why do I need it? If your answer is because I want to feel better, I want to be healthy, I want to feel more confident and happy, you're on the right way. But the motivation, I want to look like that Instagram girls, will never provide you enough resources to achieve your goals.
Yeah, Yeah, and certainly that internal locus of control is something you exhibited at very, very different points of your life, starting from when you sought out books to read in your village to when you sought out technology when you were in an FMCG role. And one of the most impressive things about you, Victoria, is when you said, and I quote, "I figured out my personal system that helps me be a good leader." But the more impressive part was, "My daily routine includes waking up at 5 a.m., meditation for 2 hours, aerial yoga, 5 hours of reading and self-development, maximum 2 meals a day, and solitude for self-reflection once in 2 weeks." So if my rickety math is right, so that's like 7 hours a day for reading, self-development, and meditation. A lot of people would say, I could never spare 7 hours a day for myself. How do you manage that routine and still manage to run a company and still manage to run a team and still manage to be productive?
Yeah. For me, if I compare yourself 5 years ago and now, it's really different person. Mm-hmm. Find your why. I have a team of 70 people and I'm responsible for their development. Mm-hmm. They believe in me and in my vision. They see me as their role model, mm-hmm. intentionally or subconsciously. If I want my employees to be motivated, healthy, and productive, mm-hmm. I have to set an example. Mm-hmm. It's essential to have a clear mind in order to make right decision without emotions or ego. Is it worth to give up some weaknesses and work on your discipline to achieve success? It's for me. Mm-hmm. My healthy routine is inspired by Buddhism philosophy, Ayurveda system. I try to get rid of weaknesses to get a clear mind and spirit. It helps me not only feel good, but to be better in business, be a better leader. Business for me is a spiritual game. I become better with every challenges I face. I look at self-improvement process, mm-hmm. as growth challenges, achievements, and experiences.
Interesting. Again, that's a very, very uncommon perspective to look at business as a very spiritual practice. And you did say you were not like this 5 years ago. What inspired you to really adopt these principles in your life?
Maybe my vision that I want to grow.
Uh-huh.
And it's great that I have the opportunity to grow yourself, mm-hmm. grow my team, mm-hmm. And make something good for this world. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because better me, first of all, provide people ideas to mm-hmm. live happier and healthier life. Mm-hmm. That motivates me that I can bring something new to this world and be useful to this world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And how do you think about your own productive time versus non-productive time? Because like I said, that's pretty much 7 hours of a day that you're spending on introspection and contemplation, which is great. What would you say to somebody that would say, well, I could spend 7 hours a day working rather than meditating and contemplating? It would be a better use of my time. What would you say to somebody who would say, think that way?
I suppose that you don't follow any role model. You mm-hmm. just need to first hear yourself.
Yeah.
Why you need something and what you need.
Mm-hmm.
And, maybe in 1 year, I'm totally changed my mindset and my working routine.
Yeah.
And it's okay for me. And not follow that just like Instagram girl or etc.
Yeah.
No way.
I find that truly inspiring about you. And also to dig into your personal practices, you said every 2 weeks you have solitude for self-reflection. What does that look like?
Especially maybe one day it's great when I'm not communicate with no one. I just saw every plans that I need to do for these 2 weeks and understand how I grow for 2 weeks and how I can better unleash my team's potential, personal communication, and what to do next, and how I can do the next step better. I always find what I can improve in the next step.
And it sounds like the process of contemplation allows you to step back and figure out where you're going to grow next. And it sounds incredible to me. And it's something that I find very, very rare. It sounds like you're incredibly driven. You invest your time in ways that are very, very fruitful for you. It would be easy for a lot of our listeners to think, well, Victoria's had no failures ever because she gets to meditate 7 hours a day or read 5 hours a day, meditate 2 hours a day. She really doesn't need anything. So can you speak to any really challenging moments or failures that you've experienced lately, to the extent you're comfortable sharing, of course?
Personally, the key challenges is personal communication. It's all about my team, all about my people, because if they grow, business will grow. And the key problem was maybe 1 year ago that I'm not confidently provide feedback and point of growth. I want to create family, but I'm not mother or father. We are sport team, and I need a sport trainer or coach to allow people play the game and show immediately red card and set them go out from this field. Because we grow very fast, and every mistake in the team, if we have weak players in our team, we really go to the failure with weak player in our team.
Who do you learn from and who do you look to for inspiration?
For me, it's two best people whose work I have read and learned. It's Andrew Chen from Andreessen Horowitz, everything about investment in startup, product growth. And Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn, investor in Fairlock. 90% of problematic cases I have to deal with every day were covered in this book. Of course, I listen to his podcast, Masters of Scale, where he holds discussion with global leaders. I dream that one day I can be guest of a Reid Hoffman podcast also and get a chance to say thanks personally, because I have read all his work from A to Z, and his knowledge helps me to lead the company through the challenges.
Certainly. And with regard to your personal and spiritual practices, are there inspirations that you have?
It's mostly about ancient knowledge about Buddhism, Ayurveda, yoga, nothing more.
Where do you read this? Where do you learn about these things?
Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, that's how you say it.
Bhagavad Gita. And then you just go into deep, but the key is Bhagavad Gita, everything about your mind, how to self-improve yourself.
Could you tell our listeners how they could find out more about you?
You can join to my LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, everywhere, especially on LinkedIn. I also answer on any question.
Victoria, thank you again for taking the time to be on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Hey guys, this is Shamant again. Before you go, I have a small but very important favor to ask. If you get any pleasure or inspiration from this episode, could you please leave a review on your favorite podcasting platform, be it iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast fix? This podcast is very much a labor of love. It makes no money, and each episode takes many, many hours to put together. When you leave a rating or write a review, it not only means a great deal of encouragement to me, but it also supports getting the word out about How Things Grow. Thank you again for listening, and I look forward to seeing you with the next episode. Thank you.